Thanks for joining today's podcast. Today's guest, Jeff Gardner, is the co-founder and co-owner with his twin brother of the supplement company, Bucked Up. He's helped his company partner with Conor McGregor, Bryson DeChambeau, and numerous other celebrity influencers. He's a master at marketing and branding, including in the affiliate marketing space, lead generation, data management, email marketing, social media marketing, and more. His company, Bucked Up, started, and it's about a decade old, and they're closing in on $300 million of sales this year, and it's just a great podcast. He's a great guy. Hope you like the episode. Thanks. Yeah, we're picking up a little 54 unit. We sold about 2 miles away. We sold a deal for about 134, 135 a door. And we're picking this thing up for like 70 grand a door. And in my mind, a year from now, it's going to be, you know, 140, 145 a door. So it's just, it was just kind of rinse and repeat. And it just kind of fell in my life. It's actually in my hometown. So I'm like, I've been calling on these properties forever. And it just happened to be that it fell in my lap here. So
you gotta let me know about those deals.
Yeah. So we're just 1031 and forward. And yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
We're excited about
that's cool. So how many doors do you have now?
We're at like 1892 or something like that.
Crazy.
1892. Awesome. So we've slowed down on the like the unit count, but my mindset's changed a little bit as some of these deals, I'm doing the math on some of these deals that we're going full cycle on. And I'm like, what I'd like to be able to do is just own almost like 30 to 50% of the portfolio, just straight up by myself, maybe close family and friends. And then keep growing the private equity arm as well and keep our investors rocking and rolling as well. So we've kind of gone through a period where it's been a little bit on the smaller end of deals between 40 and like 80 unit type deals, but you know, instead of owning somewhere between 5 and 20%, owning, you know, 75 to 90% of them and getting some investors in and whatnot. So just it can be a little bit more of a little more flexibility on the money in the back end, right? So
yeah,
that's looking
good. That's cool. That's
cool helicopter in the background. I need to get a real helicopter in the background.
You need to come out so we can take you on that.
I know. Is that yours? Because you have a couple of them, right?
Yeah, I actually invested in a helicopter school.
That's
so
right.
I own a school just for tax reasons and whatnot. And I acquired that school, and I have a partner in it now. And they run it. He and his wife run it for me. It's doing really well. But I have like of my own, I bought like three or four of my own, and then I lease it to the school, you know, lease it and some of them, but we don't ever lease this one. 'Cause it's like, this would be considered like the Lamborghini of helicopters.
Okay.
So you don't like lease those out, you know, all the time. So, but all the other ones for training and as people learn on a certain machine, they can work their way up to a little nicer and a little nicer. So I have a couple steps of helicopters that go up.
That's
and
awesome.
It's a fun little business. I like flying, you know.
I can't remember. Do you have a plane or not? I can't remember.
We did have a jet. We had a Embraer 300. It was like a Phenom 300, and it was super nice. But we chartered it a lot. But this charter company kind of wasn't very ethical, and so we ended up selling that.
Gotcha.
And then I moved it over into this school.
Okay.
Kind of like 31ing.
Yeah, you know? No, it makes sense. Yeah.
So, but the game, school kicks out cash. Like, it kicks out.
The games you got to play, right?
Yeah.
So, how do you get started in a supplement company? How do you grow it to 9 digits, 10 digits? I don't know, wherever you're at. How do you grow it that quickly? What did you start it? By the way, I gave everyone that's already listening, they're going to hear kind of your quick background, and I do an introduction at the beginning of this that you didn't hear, so they kind of have some perspective and context. So when did you start that supplement company? Where is it at now, and how did you do it?
Man, you know, we grew up on a farm. It would be surprising to hear that we were farmers, and we grew up in this little farming community up in Clearfield, Utah, which is north of Salt Lake City. And you know, we didn't go to school. We didn't do much of anything. We were just hard workers, you know, and when we came off of our missions, because we're in Utah, we go on these Mormon missions, and we went to a sales floor that, you know, you would call and teach people coaching. It's kind of like your program where you have a mentor that walks you through deals, and they teach you how to do real estate. And at the time, the internet was starting, so we were starting to sell that too, like how to make money on the internet. And we start getting into figuring out that the guy that was giving us the leads to call on, we would call it as like boiler room style, right? And we call and basically try to upsell somebody into working with a coach. So we'd sell them $5,000, $10,000, sometimes even $20,000 in less than an hour.
Right.
And we were good at it because we were going around knocking on doors trying to sell religion for 2 years. So getting told no over the phone was no problem, you know.
You're getting doors slammed in your face.
Doors slammed in our faces. This is nothing. So, but we realized that the guys who are making the money are the guys providing these leads to these floors. And the internet was coming on pretty strong, and we said, hey, we need to figure this out. And just by sheer determination and working hard, we figured out. And we were about 3 years ahead of most everybody else because it took them a long time to figure out what we knew. And so everybody started coming to us, and they would come and say, hey, I have this product. Can you help me sell it on the internet? And we would, and we'd take it, and we would help grow their companies tremendously, right? And so after a few years, we're like, hey, after growing all these other people's companies, let's just do our own. Because some of them would actually not do things right. They wouldn't do customer service right, or their merchant account would shut down, and then they would owe us money.
When you say do your own, you mean instead of almost being like the sales team that you're getting a split of the revenue maybe, or a commission, you're going to own the products?
Yeah, because they would come, and it could be any product. Like, I don't, you know, just any random thing. Like, they'd come up to us and say, can you help me sell this? And we'd say, sure, you give us this much money for every sale that we get you. And they would just turn around and make lots more, right?
Yeah.
They'd have a customer, and they would auto ship them sometimes and things like that. But relying on these other people to run their companies properly was the real chore, right? And so after a while, we were like, you know, we shouldn't do this for a lot of other companies unless we own part of it. And one time, my dad was taking this high blood pressure stuff called L-arginine. And when he said, you should really talk to my boys because they know how to really get you traffic. Do you want to grow this? And he goes, yeah, yeah. So he came down and visited, and within 1 hour, I negotiated with him, and I owned 50% of his company, right? I said, you just make sure you have enough product and you do the fulfilling part. We will drive all the traffic. And we looked at his website, and it was terrible. He didn't really know what he was doing, and he was making like $700 a day. And yeah, we were like, I don't know how, but you know, this must be a popular product. Within about 3 weeks, we were doing about $3,500 a day. And we took this product, and we bought, you know, as we went along, we bought this domain called larginine.com, and it cost us $25,000 just for the domain name.
Yeah.
It was ranking number one, and we called this guy up in the UK. He was in the UK, and we said, hey, we want to buy your site. And he goes, it's not for sale. And we said, come on, everything's for sale. How much for the domain name? Because you're ranking number one. And he knew he was. But he just had information on it. He wasn't selling anything. He was just the benefits of L-arginine. So he sold it to us for $25,000. But right after that, we were probably doing $3 or $4 million a year just on that one product. And we weren't like, I wish we would have known what we know now. Obviously, we would have set people up on subscribe and save and rebuild and everything else. But we were just selling it one at a time. And most of our audience was about 35 to 55 years old. So
it's easy to be Monday morning quarterback on that, just like anything else.
Yeah. So that was a very successful business for us. And while we were doing that, we read an article in Sports Illustrated called Deer Antler Spray is banned in all professional sports and NCAA. And we're like, what's deer antler spray? Is it, do you spray it on a muscle or something? How does that work? And it really was a recovery product that helps you kick off your own IGF-1, and you spray it in your mouth, and it helps kick off your own IGF-1 to recover very quickly.
Ray Lewis is when that kind of came out, right? I mean, that's when everyone started hearing about it.
This. We saw this article, and we're like, dude, this is like another L-arginine. We go to GoDaddy, and it's available for $7. And we're like, buy. How fast can we buy it? we designed a website, put it up, and we found some product out of Florida. And, you know, it really didn't do anything. Like, hardly anybody was reading that article or saw it. We were getting about 5 or 10 orders a day. And after about 5 months, we were like, are we going to have to take this horse out back and shoot it? Like, just be done with it? And it was Super Bowl media week. And Ray Lewis on camera, he had torn his tricep 3 weeks previous. And he announced that he was going to be able to play in the Super Bowl. And everybody was like, how in the world did you recover this fast? And a guy holds up, a reporter holds up receipts and says, I have receipts that show that you bought deer antler spray. And everybody's like, what's deer antler spray, right? And he goes, I bought it, but I didn't take it. He couldn't have done it better, right? He's like, I bought it, but I didn't take it. Sure. Like, they can't test for it because it's kind of like testosterone levels. Your testosterone level might be different than mine, right?
Yeah.
So they would have had to have measured right before and right after and see, but they just don't do that. And so it's kind of undetectable. That's why they ban it. And I'm not kidding. We walk into the office one day and we have 100 orders. And we're like, what's going on? Are we getting scammed here? Like, what is this for? And a buddy calls us up and says, turn on ESPN right now. And I'm not kidding. Every 5 minutes, they were announcing Ray Lewis and this deer antler spray little scandal that was going on. And we got free advertising. And we were ranking number one because we owned deerantlerspray.com.
For $7.
For $7. And, you know, this spray, I'm just going to be straight, it only costs us like $5. We sell it on our site for $39.95. Well, as the orders were coming in, we said, we're going to run out. Mark it up to $59. Didn't stop. Mark it up to $79. Didn't stop. We sold almost 2,000 bottles at $99 a bottle that day.
Crazy.
We sold out of every product. And then, you know, like a day later, GNC hits us up and says, how fast can you get us 30,000 bottles? And we'll bypass all the, you know, they kind of plan out where they're going to put it on shelves and they have all this legal work. And they said, forget about it. Everybody's asking for it. How fast can you get it? We call up our guy and he goes, hey, we said, this is the deer antler spray, guys, call it. And he's like, I thought I'd hear from you. How many do you want? You know, like 30,000 bottles. How fast? And he called us back a little later and said, I can fulfill that in 3 weeks.
How do you know? You kind of started that story by sharing, you know, how you bought the URL and then you said, you know, it wasn't doing much. You're going to take the horse to Outback behind the shed and shoot it. What made you guys not take it out back and shoot the idea and take it down?
You know, these products have a certain expiration date, but if the product expired before we sold it all, we would have just dumped them, wrote them off and just said, hey, we're not pursuing this anymore.
Gotcha. I didn't know if it was because you're just stubborn and just it's a never give up thing and you're digging and, you know,
no, just we, kept we on really digging. Don't give up. So, you know, we don't, we're very loyal, but we're very, like, we're pretty good at like figuring it out. Like, if we couldn't have done it that way, we'd have tried to figure out something else to do it. But, you know, being in the right spot at the right time, we were very blessed or very lucky. I mean, you know, sometimes we'd rather be lucky than good. But I think the harder, this is something for people watching. I think the harder you work, the luckier you get. You know, that's the saying. And we were just grinders. We just kind of, but we were very logical, street smart of marketing, and we knew how to make it work. So, you know, we went to these GNC conferences with our little deer antler spray after, and people would come around that were franchisee owners, and they were like, yeah, we like your product, but you only have deer antler spray. You know, we're like, we need to come out with something else. And we would look around at all these other people's booths, and they were selling this pre-workout. And you know, we weren't big gym guys. We said, you know, let's go try some of these pre-workouts. And they were awful. They tasted terrible. They'd make you itch, and we thought we were allergic to it. You know, all this stuff. And we said, we just need to come out with more of a line of products and sell more to GNC and other stores. So we made the best tasting, and then we made the best working because we came out with all of the best ingredients at the clinical dose. So for instance, we would put like 6 grams of citrulline in it when other people would put 2. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't really tell you what was in it because they had a little proprietary blend, but we would detail out exactly what our formula consisted. And people were like, aren't you afraid people are going to copy your formula? And we're like, that's fine. Let's just have them try to beat us at marketing because that's our forte.
Yeah.
And that's really what happened is we made the best tasting and best working. It wasn't hard at the time because nobody had good tasting ones. So, and people would go try this and they would be like, this is the best stuff I have ever taken.
Yeah, I mean, I always have two to four of you guys' products in my house all the time. And it's, I mean, all of it, every product I've tried from you guys' stuff tastes phenomenal. And again, like with my college football background and just workout background for the last, well, since like 2000, probably 2006, 2007, I mean, I've been on a lot of different things and tried a lot of different things, and it's phenomenal stuff. And it works. You have some really good stuff.
So it tastes great and it just is very effective. And that's what we try. And, you know, when we first came out, we were the most expensive pre-workout on the market.
Yeah.
So we came in and not said, hey, let's not try to beat everybody at the lowest price. Let's try to put the best ingredients together and be the best. And within 6 months to a year, we were number one in every mom and pop supplements shop and all the vitamin shops, GNCs. Now we're in Walmart. So we sell probably 100,000 bottles of creatine every month in Walmart.
Yeah. I mean,
creatine's a big one. And we try to get the best quality creatine and everything else. But really, you know, we learn pretty quickly, and it's just like maybe doing these deals with you. It helps to have the right people in your organization, you know, and we went we started doing, energy drinks, and we thought, hey, we're going to need some capital. So maybe we need to raise some funds. And when a guy came in to help us organize that, he said, well, like, who's your marketing guy and who's your CFO? And we're like, we're doing all of it. We didn't have anybody. We were bootstrapping. It was like we had like 9 people working for us, right?
Yeah.
And we were doing all of our own jobs, and none of us were really an expert at anything. And he said, well, I know the downside is that you guys are trying. And when I say you guys, me and my twin brother, I have a twin brother. We founded and started the company. And he said, you know, the weakness is, you know, you guys are trying to do everything. You need to hire the right team to come in. And we're not dumb. We're like, okay, let's hire a CFO. Well, the CFO comes in, we hire one, and he does the numbers. And he goes, guys, you don't need to raise money. You are making enough money with your supplements and other things to, perpetuate the growth of the company without taking on investors. Don't give up any equity. Mm-hmm. And so we told the guy, hey, sorry, but your advice just cuts you out. Like,
yeah,
you know, we don't need it.
Yeah.
So we still kind of bootstrapped, but we hired the right people. So we got a legal, and we got a CFO, and we got some other people, a CMO on board, a marketing officer that worked with us in the past. And really, it kind of just grew from there. And we hired some in-house sales guys, and that really helped because we collect money up front. Help yeah. grow a company and stuff like this. So, you know, but same thing like in real estate, you got to have people who know what they're doing, how to run numbers, how to look at market caps and all that stuff. And over the years, as the company grew, now this year, we're going to do about $300 million in sales. And,
this is, you know, what, 10 years? How long have you been in business?
We started in 2016.
2016.
Yeah, and so
9 years, and you're gonna be hitting $300 million this year.
Yeah, and they think we're evaluated of close to $1 billion. So we're gonna see what's out there. You know.
Yeah.
We're not dumb. We'd take it, but also, we know we need people that know how to run a company of this size to help us, because, you know, we hired some people. We hired the former CEO of Dr. Pepper to help us with our drinks when we launched the energy drinks finally. We had some people, and then, you know, we learned a lot of stuff along the way. Like one time, right when we launched energy drinks, we wish we didn't make this mistake, but it happened. We put a little too much of one ingredient in, and then it wore off and became bitter. So we ran about 250,000 drinks. Oh. And we had to destroy them all because somebody tasted it, like, man, Bucked Up always tastes so good, but this is kind of like so-so, like maybe a, like
you
a
six. You can't have that out there.
No. And so we literally did a content shoot, and we're throwing them up and shooting with shotguns and running over with trucks. And, you know, we learned our lessons. And you know, when stuff like that happens, you got to, you know, if you're given lemons, you make lemonade out of it.
And I was going to say, you found a way to get some use out of it.
Yeah. And we just said, hey, guys, we know we didn't make the best tasting, but we've come out with a new one. And so we made a new one, and they were like a 9 out of 10 on the drink, on the taste. So that's where we wanted to be. Yeah. So, and then this former CEO of Dr. Pepper helped us get distribution. So the first year we sold about 4 million drinks. The second year we sold 20 million drinks when he was involved. And last year we sold about 65 million drinks. And we're on track. And we just launched a protein drink. And in 1 month, we sold 2 million drinks with the protein.
That's crazy.
It's 25 milligrams of isolate whey protein. And we were the first ones to actually carbonate it. There was a guy who had a patent, and we agreed. And we worked it out. And so now we were the first ones to launch a lightly carbonated protein drink. And so now we sold 2 million of that. I think they're going to sell as much as the energy drinks.
It's crazy. Yeah. So when you had those initial 9 people and you said it was just you guys grinding it out, how careful were you with those 9 people when it came to hiring as far as, like, you know, I feel like if it's that small of a group, if you had one rotten egg out of that, it could it have, you know, sidetracked and blown up everything? And how important was those 9 people that you selected? Maybe they weren't the most, like, again, they weren't perhaps the most experienced, but like, did they have grit? What was it about those 9 people, and what?
Exactly. They had the work ethic that we did. I'm glad we didn't have HR, because we were kind of like, slave drivers. Like, we would just tell them how it is. Sometimes we'd get in arguments and fights in the office. Me and Ryan would even fight, and you know, people would break us up and stuff, because, you know, sometimes when you need to get through issues, you need to hash it out and get it worked out. But these 9 people had the same mentality and work ethic as we did, and we didn't expect any less. If they didn't have that mindset, and you know, these are the type of people that would work after hours. They never went 9 to 5. They would be like, if something needed to get done, they would stay late, work hard, and they were very key to our organization. You know, and some have moved on, some have stuck with us from that time. But you know, if we ever sell this company, we're going to take care of those people that were in the beginning. You know, we're going to go back and just give them a little bonus and be like, hey, you helped us get to where we are. But yeah, it was a little trying, in the beginning, because we were trying to do things that we didn't know. And, it was hard when we started to grow to pay somebody more than the people who were there at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like this former CEO of Dr. Pepper, we were paying, you know, big money.
Yeah.
And we're like, you would be making more than me and Ryan and all these people who helped us grow this. But the other side of it is he was going to help perpetuate us much, much better. So we had to suck it up a little bit and eat it.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. And having like those right people, and especially in the beginning, we were pretty good until of that same mindset, work ethic, until we got to about 70, 80 employees. Then we kind of had to get an HR, and then the whole mindset changed. You know, honestly, when HR comes in, people have somebody to go complain to. Hey, Jeff yelled at me, or Ryan yelled at me. Before, they would just have to tell us, and we're like, and, you know, yeah. But When HR came in, it definitely changed things. Now we have about 300 employees.
Yep.
And we do everything in-house. We fulfill out of our own warehouse. We now have three buildings. One's a content house, and we have a headquarters here in Orem, Utah. But, you know, it's funny how things happen. And, you know, we're still day-to-day operators, which I think we'd like to take a little step back because we just grind and work hard. And we would like to take a little step back and just do networking and other things, because sometimes we feel like we're doing all this admin stuff and meetings and stuff, and that's just not us. We don't like meetings per se and stuff.
Yeah. I just think it was interesting. I just wanted to hear what you had to say about those first nine, because it's always interesting when you're around people that, I mean, there's so many people that think just getting more people on board is going to help you, when really that can deter you. Like, if you would have had, at that point in time, if you would have had 18 people working the regular 9 to 5 versus the 9 working more hours, again, it could have been not nearly as good of a result.
That's right.
Just because of the type of person you're bringing in, thinking that you needed a seat, thinking that you needed to fill a seat, when really it's just, hey, let's figure out how we can buck up and do this.
No pun intended, but you know, like, even today we had a leadership meeting and we're like, guys, we need to do a hiring freeze, because we just keep hiring people.
Yes.
Because they each have their own departments, and they've like, hey, we need a person for this, and we need a person for this. And so we had to say, guys, let's do a hiring freeze. Maybe see who's the most effective and who isn't, and then let's remove those people before we hire more. And it's tough decisions sometimes, right? I mean, we have a lot of people relying on us now. 300 people is not a small amount of people, and it gives you a little pressure that you have to perform and make money, and then also pay good. We pay our people really well, especially for Utah, and we try to take care of everyone. But, you know, we had somebody buy in 2021. So it's much like having investors come into your property. Mm-hmm. We didn't really need the money. So these people were strategic partners. People that know what they're doing. One was our manufacturer, and we sold like 20% of our business to him in 2021. And he's a great partner to have. Like, in 2021, if you remember, that's the year after COVID. And he goes, Jeff and Ryan, the month after he came in, he goes, Jeff and Ryan, we're going to have shortage on creatine because all the factories were making masks instead of creatine. They were making these masks for the COVID vaccine, you know, problem. And he goes, there's only 90,000 bottles of creatine left in the whole market, overseas and, you know, China and everywhere. How many do you want? And we said, we want to buy it all. He goes, well, you have to prepay for 90,000 bottles of creatine. And so we said, we have never been in debt as a company, which has really helped us, right? We never went into debt, and every time our manufacturer would deliver something, we'd pay him. Even though he gave us net 30 terms, we would just pay because we wanted to know everything was paid for. And he actually put us as a priority because we'd pay immediately too. Yeah. So it helped us. So we said, we'll buy all 90,000 bottles. We want it all. And we prepaid it. You know, it was some big money. When our bottles hit with our label on 6 weeks later, when it hit, everyone was out of creatine. They couldn't get more. And so in one day, we called up GNC and said, we have 90,000 bottles. How many do you want? And they said, all of it. And we said, no, can't have it. You know. And we sold them 40,000 bottles in one day. And we called up GNC, or Vitamin Shop, and said, how many do you want? And we sold them 20,000. So in one day, we sold 60,000 bottles and made $1.4 million in profit.
That's crazy.
So we were like, hey, this is why you get strategic people to help, right?
Yeah.
Or you have the money to buy stuff, or you don't go in debt if you don't need to. We put the rest of those bottles, the 30,000 we had remaining, we put on Amazon, And because everybody ran out of stock, we went up to the top and we were selling 500 bottles a day at full retail price.
Yeah.
And we had marked it up because nobody had it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, being in the right time, spot at the right time has always been kind of our forte, and being ready to handle certain things that come up. It's always been something that we've been really good at timing and working through. So, and then in 2021, we had a PE firm that came in and they bought 25% of the company for bigger money. So,
yeah,
and we just took it all off the table. They wanted, they came in and said, hey, okay, put this, all this money to work. And we're like, we don't need that.
Right.
And they're like, well, what do we tell all our investors that are helping go into this fund? And we're like, that sounds like your problem, not ours, but we're going to take it because we don't need it. And they went through with it because they saw the potential.
When you say we don't need it, the company didn't need it, you're saying? And
yeah, the company didn't need it for growth.
Yeah.
And because we had never gone into debt, so our business could always pay for itself.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when you're looking at these real estate deals, you know, and seeing how much money you need to put in, and then what happens if you sell, you know? So we did this little structure of what happens if we ever sell, because of course PE firms want to, like your investors, get in and then make a return and get out and maybe into another deal.
Yep.
But the only issue with investors or PE firms is they're all about numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So they've put a lot of pressure on us a little bit to perform, you know, mm-hmm. And it became not as fun, I should say, because we're so worried about numbers instead of worried about our employees or having fun and doing some things. But, you know, we've had some pretty good times here. We signed Conor McGregor. He came and visited, and we took him to a BYU game. Dude, it was the craziest thing you've ever seen. The whole crowd was like, we love Conor. it was wild, and it went viral on all the sports channels and Barstool Sports and ESPN.
I saw you everywhere.
It was people in Brazil were calling me, telling me they see us. You know.
Yeah.
And it was good times. Now we just signed Bryson DeChambeau. He's coming tomorrow.
Oh,
and
sweet.
We're landing the helicopter right on the 18th green at this country club.
Yeah.
He's going to hit over it and, you know, we're going to take him up on some peaks and have him hit the golf ball off.
Yeah.
See how far it goes and stuff. So we're going to have some fun and we try to keep having a lot of fun and doing some fun content out of it. You know,
when did you guys implement your hiring freeze?
Last week.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about it again today, just how we need to, cause our EBITDA kept getting eaten up a little bit just with overhead and some other things. And so we're trying to just figure out how to be effective. We also have implemented
that 9-man mentality a little bit.
Exactly. And sometimes you got to do it, right? Like you learn, you know, and sometimes you need to grow and then bring it back. We called it DOBE. Department of Efficiency.
And we got a similar thing going on over here right now.
Do you?
Oh yeah.
And you know what we really focused on is AI as well.
Yeah.
And again, we always try to be ahead of the curve and we think that's where it's going. So we're going to be there first. We just launched, his name is Buck. He's our fitness companion AI. And when you buy a product now, you'll go to the thank you page and Buck will be there and says, hi, I'm Buck. I'm here to help you. Do you want to know how to use your products effectively? It's really going to, it knows everything about our business. It knows when to take products, how to take them. It'll create a meal plan for you. It will tell you your macros for the day, like MyFitnessPal. It will tell you, hey, this is what your meal plan should be based on your goals. And you'll have to check it out. It's just launching today.
I got to order a couple more things. I'll do that. Will it be live tonight?
Yeah. Yeah. Tonight is supposed to be live. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll order tonight or tomorrow. I'll make sure I get to see them.
For sure. Yeah. You'll see. And we'll send you some pictures, but it's, you know, Buck is awesome. And it's going to really, we implemented it into our customer service four people, it's going to take the spot of four people just by knowing all the answers to every question and be able to answer them.
Yeah.
And it'll handle all the tickets. It'll handle all of the customer support. It'll tell people where their tracking is for their order. If they want to make a change, it'll change it. Mm-hmm. We're excited because we want to work effectively, work smart, not hard, you know?
For sure. How much of the actual Doge movement do you think rolled over into your business from politics on down? Because we see what was going on there, and then we've essentially been put in that same position, and that's kind of where we're at. And we kind of kept going back and referring to Doge a lot, and you brought that up, and that's why. How much do you think came from that versus maybe the actual circumstances your business was in?
I think we focused on cost savings and being effective or efficient with our spends. Just in our meeting today, we found over $500,000 of cost savings to our bottom line today.
Right.
Just with getting another product versus the from a different place. We have these lids on these bottles that are they're certain soft touch. Now we actually can get this soft touch with the Buck logo in the top embossed, and it'll save us $250,000 over the year just by going with this new manufacturer.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, Department of Bucked Up Efficiency really is coming into play, and we've saved millions this year just in shipping.
Yeah.
And it really sometimes, it's hard to grow a business and be so particular about things. But now that we're big and we put this freeze and we're now being more efficient, it's all money to your bottom line, right? Like that's pure profit.
Yeah.
And if you could evaluate your company or evaluate your properties at a certain amount, that pays 10 or 20 times. In our business, it's 20. I don't know what it is.
I would say you're probably 18 to 25 where you're at. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're 16, with how real estate's done, we're 16 to 20, depending on the property and location.
And, right now is a great time to get evaluated and know. There was a company, Alani knew, that just sold for 20 times EBITDA. So everything that we save and is profit to the company is just 20 times that amount. So we saved, $500,000. That's worth 20 times that amount if you were ever going to sell.
Yeah. And there's so many people that think about, they're hearing the numbers of, okay, this is how much extra cash flow you guys are going to get or whatever, right? But I automatically go to the value of that too, because I know, the earnings multiples, and you take the EBITDA, you take the multiple and whatnot. In real estate, you take the NOI and you're divided by the cap rate, which is just an inverse multiplier of a multiple. There's three properties we were really struggling with for occupancy for a long time. And so my dad and myself and one of their business partners just basically said, look, we're taking this third of our portfolio, is basically 600 units. We're taking this 600 back and we're just going to run it. And they were like, between all that we had, it was about 15. So we had 15 times six. So 15, 30, 45. So we had about 90 vacancies at those 600 units. And we were just getting all types of excuses why they couldn't be filled and whatnot. We filled them all in 42 days or something like that.
Crazy.
And then some, because there was other ones that gave notice, moved out. So I think we ended up filling like that plus another 15% or something in that period of time. What that did was it applied pressure, and we ended up getting some resignations from our leadership team, including the CEO, the VP of operations. So they left. I then went and let go of a director underneath them. We haven't hired them back. It's $700,000 of savings between salaries. Yeah. Between salaries and the employment taxes and the benefits and all that stuff. But now it's like people that are here, there's people here though that now are making more than they've made before, because and also the message has been, hey, look, we're not backfilling this, but we haven't backfilled any positions. There's a couple other people that left with that as well, with that change. And initially, I was asking, what do we need to do around here? The only thing I don't want to hear is we need to hire more people. And, diving into the company, because I hadn't been in the management end of it since 2019. Mm-hmm. And so diving in, you know, I realized, man, how much red tape there was, bureaucracy there was. And I just started cutting stuff. I mean, we had customer service people that couldn't give more than a $25 credit without going to their boss. I'm like, what do you guys want? How much? And they're like, 500. I'm like, sure. Done. Let's do it. I'm like, well, you know, so that's what I've been asking everyone on the ground level, what do you need? And I've been getting it for them. And like our performance everywhere is just skyrocketed. That reminds me
of a story that we did when we were first making some money. At first, my dad, he happened to come to us and say, boys, hey, I got this deal and you got to help me do it. And we're like, okay, what is it? And he goes, I'm doing some real estate development up in Ogden, Utah, and up the canyon there. And he goes, I know this guy that has some property and I can flip it immediately for like triple our money. And we're like, hey, sounds great. How much? And he goes, it's $500,000. You guys put up the money and we'll do it in the third. We're like, oh, that sounds like a great deal, Dad. So, but we did it. So we gave him $517,000 and we closed on this land. And no joke, in 60 days, we had $1.7 million back in our pocket.
That's awesome.
Then we had the 1031. So we put it into, it was called the Preserve at Prairie Point in Lubbock, Texas. And we owned 186 units. So we 1031'd it into this apartment complex. And it's just like you were saying, we weren't making money because we had this management company managing it for us. And we're like, hey, it's like 85% full. And they're like, well, you can't make money until it's like 93% and blah, blah, blah. So we went down there and we basically did, you know, doge on them and said, where are we not making money? And how come you can't fill these? And we almost did the exact same thing you did.
Yeah.
We turned it and we made it effective. And we said, guys, get out. And we kind of handled it a little bit on our own. And within probably like 60 days, we had 95% occupancy and we didn't have to pay them their percentage and we were making money. And
this difference of having true skin in the game versus not. You care about it. That's why I still go to this property. I'm picking the trees. There's a ton of trees. I'm picking the trees that we're trimming. It gets the green tape. The ones that we're cutting out gets the red tape. The ones that don't have anything. I was there for, you know, 45 minutes, an hour. But again, it's like when you're invested in it, you get into the weeds of caring about every single detail because, you know, that's what it takes to be successful.
And sometimes they would have a 3-bedroom unit that wasn't available because they just hadn't cleaned it or painted some of the scuff marks and stuff. So they're like, it's not ready. But we're like, why aren't you just going in and fixing it?
Yeah.
You know, so we just went and worked ourselves and fixed it and got it rentable. And then all of a sudden that perpetuated everything else.
Yep.
And it's like caring about the trees or caring about the units that are available to rent. And it's simple things, but sometimes it takes a little hard work and you got to be willing to get into it and be, you have some skin in the game and be like, I'm going to make this work one way or the other. And you just be persistent and determined to make it happen.
Well, and then like what we're kind of going back again to like your, you know, your first 9-man mentality, I'm going to call it. Because like, then we also had people come and say, well, I want a raise. I said, there's the door. You can leave if you want. We're not giving out a raise right now. Now, I'm not going to raise your base, but you know, we were telling our salespeople, basically, we were saying, look, we started to compensate them differently as well, where they could. And now again, like those salespeople are making probably, I don't know, probably about 2x what they were making prior. Yeah. Right. But it's incentives. It's all incentives. Yeah. It's not raising, you know, it's not taking a base up. It's all incentives and production. And all of a sudden, what's going on? Well, previous, we weren't open on Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm.
Well, people don't lease apartments on Saturdays. I'm like,
bullshit. That's the busiest day, probably. Like,
you know, so now we have, but again, like we're paying. So if it's an after hours or on a weekend, they get bonus even more for that showing once they move in. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things that we're looking to do in this company too. Did you guys take anything? Are you a fan of looking at other businesses and see what might be unique to those types of businesses or industries and seeing how you can implement them within your own?
So back in the day, yeah. And we will never claim to be the smartest guys. You know, we don't know what we're doing sometimes.
I'm with you.
We're going to listen.
Most days, Jeff, I don't know what I'm doing.
and you know, like, you just have to be humble enough to be willing to hear what other people are doing and then just try to be better and do better. People will always ask us too, like, hey, who's your competition? And we're so focused on our own. We don't really care about them. But then again, we will pay attention and see what they're doing and see how we can be improve. And if somebody's going to tell us how to implement something for our own business, we're going to listen to them. And, you know, we get hit up a lot. We've made good money since that lead business back when we started doing the internet thing. That was back in the year 2000, 1999. You know, this is when the internet was first coming. And we have made really good money since then, you know, especially for Utah. I think the average household when we started was about $26,000. Right now it's probably about $50,000. Mm-hmm. But back then we were making $300,000 each mm-hmm. on W-2, and this didn't count any of our side stuff that we were doing.
Yeah.
So people have always hit us up about businesses. And in 1 year, it was 2009, we invested into like 9 other companies. We learned a hard lesson because 6 other companies, we put about $900,000 of our money into these different companies. Because we were like, hey, invest in one, and if one works, it's going to do well. Not one of them was successful.
Yeah.
And it showed us that, you know, why invest in these other people when the money that we're investing into our own businesses are doing 10 times, you know, returns, and, you know, like 20. I mean, some would grow over 1,000 times return, like for instance. It's the best investment we could put our money into and our time. But we get hit up, I would say right now, 3 times a week with deals. And what we do with a lot of them is send it to our we now have these wealth manager guys to run numbers and to make sure that the property backs in. And, you know, we have apartment units now. We have land deals that we've done, or we bought 163 acres and we sold half of it. And made all of our money, broke even on.
Yeah.
So now we have 100 acres free and clear.
Yeah.
And but we have a bunch of deals that come along like every week, and we get to learn about investments and investing and being smart. Many deals aren't very good, but then there's other deals. I mean, my cousin got us involved. He's a developer, and he built an Amazon building, like, you know, a fulfillment mm-hmm. center. We gave him $1 million, and within a year and a half, 8 months, Amazon was in, because we built it. Within 8 months, Amazon was in and paying us lease payments every month. Within 18 months, we had an offer that we just couldn't refuse. And I put $1 million in and got $2.4 million back.
After 18 months?
After 18 months.
Yeah.
And we've done some other Amazon buildings with him. And he's now, since instead of just being a developer, he's kind of like not a hard money lender. We take on debt. You know, we're the debt service, so we're first position. And some, you know, like we recently gave him like $2 million, and we get in his debt situation is pretty interesting because you get paid back your interest, principal and interest every month.
Mm-hmm.
So after month 2, you start getting monthly payments. So off of that, we got we get about $172,000 in return every month. On the last deal, we made over 35% on our money.
Yeah.
And so we did this other $2 million deal. We've done about 5 deals with them so far, and we're in 2 of them still. But on the 3 other deals, they've all paid back over 30%.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't beat deals like that. But no. You got to have the ability to do them, right?
Right.
You got to have ability to
find them, get them. I mean, there's someone's finding that arbitrage and someone's putting that together, and there's work somewhere in there for sure. But then there's also the money aspect, and by providing the money, you're going to be able to share, and some of that upside.
Some of the stuff we've learned is we don't even put our own money in.
Mm-hmm.
We do a line of credit against our money.
Yep.
So we're borrowing.
yep.
against our money, and it's growing.
Yep.
And the money inside the fund's still growing.
Mm-hmm.
So I make...
And you're borrowing on the line of credit. You're probably between 3% and 4%, something like that.
It went up a little. So
Four and a half.
Yeah, it was like 4.5 to 6%.
Okay.
It depends on the, you know, what's going on with the interest rates. But I'm making big money on that. And so I'm not even using my own cash.
I do the same thing. We have an account that I borrowed against the line of credit before too, and done the same exact thing. Works great. You said something that I tell a lot of people when they come to me looking to, you know, there's a lot of people that come to me really early on in their business and say, hey, look, I want to invest with you. I got like 25 grand or 50 grand. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, look, your business is crushing it right now, but it's early.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a better return than putting it in your own business. Like you said, putting it back into Bucked Up, it was 1,000x or 2,000x, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, and people are like, well, I want to be diversified. You know, but I think there's a time where you shouldn't be diversified. How long were you in the game before you were more diversified?
Well, we learned our lesson. And I guess
like how much are you even diversified right now? Because you probably look at it, it's probably a very small portion of your net worth that's actually in other things other than Bucked Up.
I'm a very conservative, so I have a bunch of money, but it's in treasuries because I try to play it smart. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I have a hard time investing in other people's companies where they don't spend your money the same way that you
right.
would. So, for instance, when the stock market crashed the other day, you know, during this tariff war and stuff, it crashed. So I put like 400 grand in and made 42 grand in a day, and I got out.
Yeah.
So, like, all right, I'll do that. But I don't really trust investing in all these other companies because they just spend your money because it's not theirs. They spend it sometimes frivolously. And so it's hard to trust. So I don't really invest a lot in the stock. I do have money in the stock market, but probably 5 to 15% of my total money is in there. The rest is in treasuries, and I'll tell you why, is when real estate, let's say we don't get a lower interest going on here, the Fed doesn't cut rates,
mm-hmm.
people are going to be losing houses,
mm-hmm.
Complexes, everything yep. else, because the rates they may have got a balloon payment loan yep. or whatever. I will be in a position to come in and sweep those up.
For sure.
Because I have my cash and,
for sure.
and cash king. But even though I have cash, I'm only borrowing against it, not using it.
Yeah. So how far along were you in your business before you started diversifying these other things versus just plowing it back into whatever business you had at the time?
In 2009, I learned my lesson. So I didn't invest into other people's stuff for a long time or diversify.
Yep.
Probably in about 2013 is when I really started investing in other things. But I had to be careful because I had been burned so bad in the past that I was like, it's got to be something that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know real estate works, right? This is one of my favorite things is real estate, because real estate, I have in my first 10 years of marriage, I lived in 10 different homes, but I was buying and then living in them and flipping them. I wish I would have kept all of them. Real estate has not gone down. It only goes up. Like over time, it's only gone up. I wish I would have kept all of them. I bought my first condo when I first got married. A two-bedroom condo was $45,000. Like, how do you? It's like $400,000 now.
Yeah.
Like, I would have increased it a ton or kept renting and things like that. I wish I would have kept all of my homes. I have about 5 homes now. I'm buying a house on the beach in Brazil this week.
It's a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, but you know, at this point, I kind of can. But you know, I can get a maid, a cook, and a full time masseuse. They're each $300 for the week.
Yeah, we have a friend, and he's probably $100 million net worth guy. He was in Washington, but I think it was during the COVID mess. He built a house down in Cabo, and it's the same thing. He's got a whole, I think he's got a staff. I mean, they built it's a $20 million. It's a big house on the ocean down there. And, but he's got a full house. Like, I think it's like 6 staff members full time for their family that I think total annually they pay like $60,000 a year, I think, for like that's all of it all in for the year. Crazy.
My buddy has one on the beach there. Cabo has gone up in price a lot. Like,
yeah.
But you know, I asked my girls, I have four girls, and just the other day I was like, hey, at dinner time, I'm like, I want you guys to describe your perfect day. And what they described was last New Year's, we stayed in Brazil on this beach. And everybody described their perfect day as everything that had. And I said, you know what? I'm doing it. And it, you know, it's perfect. Everything is super, super cheap. I mean, I bought a house on the beach. It's not a crazy good house, but it's awesome. And $450,000.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get your maids, your cook, your cleaner. It's and a masseuse. My little girl's getting a massage every day. She's lined up to get her massage. You know, it's crazy. And I love the Brazilian people. And I just said, it describes our perfect day. So that's what I'm going to do. And we'll go stay a month and different things down there. Yeah. It's got great internet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Jeremy Barker was on last week and we were talking a little bit about what, you know, what about work-life balance, right?
Yeah.
And just like what we're kind of talking about here is how do you kind of intertwine fam? I mean, being so busy over the last, you know, I don't know if that thing keeps when I do something. Does it pick me up?
Yeah, I don't know. It randomly does it.
With over the last, you know, two decades, you building your business, how have you, what is your opinion on work-life balance and viewpoint on work-life balance?
You know, as an entrepreneur, it's always tough because we're not afraid of hard work. And if something needs to be done, we're going to stick it out and do it. You know, it's good to always have a wife that keeps you in check, right? Mm-hmm. My wife's been a tremendous help. She understands that sometimes I need to work longer than I need. And so there's times and seasons for that. And then at other times she puts you in check and says, hey, her key word is we're a little unbalanced here. You need to get things back to balance because sometimes I'll just work and work and work. I don't stop. And she does a great job of keeping our family balanced and keeping me balanced. And, you know, we work hard, but we play hard, you know, with the helicopters, we have helicopters, we have, you know, we go on pretty good vacations and I take the family a lot, but sometimes I just take my wife. But I was just thinking of this over the last weekend. I've been on a lot of phenomenal vacations to really great spots. And I've really been blessed to have that happen. But I have to keep that balance, especially my wife, just my relationship with my wife even. I know vacations and having some downtime with her pays its dividends 100 times over. And behind every successful guy, you got to have a good woman behind you and have a successful, you know, partnership there. So, keeping the family. I mean, it's good in Utah. We're very, very family oriented, right?
Yeah.
And my kids, one of them plays Division I soccer and the other one could play. I don't know if she's going to keep going. She's going to be a senior in high school this next year, and she's getting offers all over too. But, you know, being there for the kids and going to all their games and stuff, that's very important and something I enjoy. I actually, I'm super busy, and this last year, my daughter's high school, I said I will help coach.
I love that.
And they weren't very good at all, but guess what? We went undefeated because I like to be smart, not hard. I mean, we don't have to be the best team. We just have to outthink them. And we went undefeated and we took the state championship and beat teams that they had never beat in school history. And my daughter won Offensive Player of the Year for the whole state of Utah. Mm-hmm. And she won MVP in her 3A class. You know, so, but you know, we love sports. I'm a big sports guy like you are. And, you know, you got to learn fundamentals And same thing with investing, stick to some fundamentals and they won't lead you astray. And that's what we did. We just worked on fundamentals and then being smart. And soccer IQ, we'd play every game, and after every game I would review tape and I'd go through it. And, you know, I would tell these girls, I said, hey, I'm not here to show you the bad. I'm going to show you bad and good, but don't take the constructive criticism badly. You got to be willing to listen. And it's not just for you. It's for everyone in this room, even though you are the example. So don't take it to heart. Everybody makes mistakes. Let's learn from our mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so shortly they became so good. I mean, these girls were very good at listening and they just understood. And I had 9 ninth graders on the team.
It's crazy.
And they just learned how to get it down, how to score, because in soccer, it's all about converting a goal. Yeah. You know, the other team could be better, but if you convert more goals, you're going to win.
Yep.
So
take advantage of every single opportunity in the box.
Justin, man, it was the most fulfilling thing I think I've done in a long time.
I was talking to some of the parents. So last week we sold the building that's on the front of my book, Signature 23. We bought that for like 2.8 or 2.6 back in 2018. We just sold that for 6.4 last week. And yeah, it was a good one. And it cash flowed, every month except for the first, I think, like 8 months that we owned it. So it was a great deal. Awesome. But that was on, we closed that on Thursday. But then I coached my daughter's U-12 soccer team. And, we started in a rec league. Then we went to a tier. We've been the group, it's me and two other coaches. We've been coaching for, I think, like two and a half years now. We started as a rec team. Then it was tier 4. Tier 3, we're in the tier 1 and 2 now. So we're like working our way up with these girls. So we had a tournament and we won the tournament this last week. And I'm like, talking to these parents. I'm like, regardless. And I share everything on Instagram. So like a lot of them knew what happened last week or whatever. And I'm like, this is the highlight of the week. Like not even close.
All the deals you do, all the money you make.
It's not even close.
It's so fulfilling, right? Yeah. Like
Seeing them, and not even just not. I mean, I have a competitive problem, but like,
me too.
knowing that like the competition we were playing 2 years ago, we get beat 6-0, 8-0, 10-0 against those teams that we're playing. And now going into this tournament, we played 4 games to win it, and we outscored them 18-2. Jeez. Right. And so, but like I'm sure you also probably I a lot of times when I talk to the girls about what we're doing, because the high school coach here says, hey, you coach these sixth grade girls like they're high school boys. I'm like, I know, you got to treat them like athletes, right? But we talk a lot about how
sport, mentally,
yes,
mentally, you got to be they got to be mentally strong
and they've gotten so mentally strong. They've gotten so competitive. They've gotten like we had practice last night. I'm like, hey, we won a championship. You guys just want to, because it was the first championship they've won. And I'm like, you guys just want to be done and call it? And they're like, no, we're ready to practice. Like, they don't want practice to be done, right? And so I'm trying to get through to their head, more so anything than the soccer, too, is I'm trying to get through to their head that, look, everything that you're learning here, you can apply that to your life forever in whatever that it is that you want to do. And so I have a blast. I didn't know that you coached your daughter, and so I just wanted to share that story because I had a blast doing it. And again,
so
sports.
Fulfilling.
Yeah.
So
it, and sports is what allowed me to – it taught me everything that I still use today.
And sometimes, like sacrificing for that stuff, it's a big sacrifice at the time, but I'm not kidding. This was, like you said, for the year, that was more fulfilling to me than anything that happened with Bucked Up. And Bucked Up was going on a rocket ship. And it's like, dude, this was so fulfilling. And it took such a sacrifice of my time, but my relationship with my daughter and just being part of something that was so fulfilling, I couldn't put a measurement to it. It was crazy.
Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. Joel, I don't know if you have any questions or that you want to.
I don't know, not necessarily a question, but I think something that I don't want to gloss over that you started with, and it seems to be a trend with your whole journey, is at the speed of which we take action. Literally Bucked Up was formed based on you seeing this clip on them saying, nope, you're not allowed to take this and we're going to ban this one thing. And you didn't even know what it was.
Right.
But it's just that, like, you didn't think it was the action, the immediate, all right, well, let's look into it. Let's buy the domain. What is it? Where can I get it? Where can I move? And then even on the cusp of it, maybe dipping, maybe not, you know, we'll figure it out on the back end. But,
yeah,
you know, over and over and over in your story, it just seems to be that pattern of quick to act and then kind of fill in the, we'll figure it out as we go now, but we made the decision. So let's move forward. You're
exactly right. It's there's some people that talk about doing things and then there's others that can actually get it done. I mean, there's so many deals. My parents moved down to closer to us. They, from an hour north, they moved down. And, you know, it's a matter of people who can get things done. You kind of explained it. There's people who talk and say, oh, this would be crazy, a good idea. But it's those that can actually just get in and do it. And my parents that moved down right after COVID, my mom said, my dad's getting old, and they were on 15 acres. So they had a 5-acre piece and a 10-acre piece where a warehouse was. And, you know, my mom came down to our area and bought a house without my dad even knowing. I mean, really. And then she goes, Jeff and Ryan, can you help me? You know? So I'm like, yeah, we helped her get the house. Because she's like, your dad's getting so old, he can't clean up these properties and maintenance. So then we talked to a guy that was on this 10-acre piece. They had built a strip of storage units. And the guy wanted to expand and do another set of storage units on it. We talked to that guy and said, why don't you buy all 10 acres and the 5-acre piece, since you're like a developer? Why don't you buy all this? Within, you know, 60 days, my mom had paid us back. The guy paid $2.1 million for their pieces. And my dad was such a hoarder. He had put so much junk on these properties that the guy goes, I'll give you 30 days to come get whatever you want. And literally, he cut a hole in the side of the warehouse and just brought a tractor and dumped it in their backyard. Just scooped up stuff and just put it in a dump trailer and took it to the dump. But they were broke, and Ryan and I were supporting them basically. And overnight, they had $2.1 million cash in their pocket because they had all the property. Their properties were free and clear. They'd owned them for 30 years.
All because your mom just took action and just went and did it.
That's what it comes down to, right? Like, she just made a decision and then went for it. And then we do whatever it takes to try to make it work. But really, it's the action part and executing. A lot of people come to us with really great ideas. And then they're like, hey, they've had these ideas for a long time, but we actually are good at executing. And that's what it comes down to, is just taking action and moving and making it happen.
The speed thing's huge. Cause I mean, again, like in my mindset now with what we're doing, I mean, we bought another smaller property, 64 units, in December, and I was just doing a count today as of, we have some more going vacant this week and in June. But by the end of June, we'll have already remodeled 19 plus. We'll have remodeled all but 6 units, and we bought it at the end of December, right? And so, like, it's a speed thing for us. And what we're trying to get to is, okay, I want to be able to buy, you know, a 300 unit and turn that thing around in just 6 months.
Yeah.
Versus, exactly. Like, you know, what you know, we were always good at turning stuff around. I mean, there's a lot of arbitrage in my deals where we get a lot of equity day one just with how we negotiate them and find them off market, whatever. But you know, this next step, I think, is what's going to allow us to, again, be a rocket ship, because if we can turn properties around that fast, we're able to go out and take on more deals, right? Cool. But again, you're going to have, you know, there's going to be things that you're going to have to figure out on the back end of making some of these decisions quick, and not every decision is going to be perfect. But I think that's the problem, is like, nothing's gonna be perfect anyways. And so, like, if all these people are waiting for perfection before they make a decision, or waiting before they have, like, how many decisions, Jeff, do you make every day on maybe only having 40 to 60% of the information?
That's right. But you have to do it all the time.
Yeah. You're never going to have 80%, 100% of the information.
You have all your ducks in a row before you do something.
Never. Just,
you'll miss the boat. You really will. And our goal is to be ahead of every, like the competition, and be ahead of other, you know, just with investors. There's a reason I bought your course, because I know there's money in real estate. And I don't know everything about it. That's why I want to go with someone like you that has the experience and has a team and be able to run the numbers properly and things. I mean, I'm just waiting for more deals to come my way from you.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll get send you some here soon. So
yeah, I'm ready.
Sweet. Well, I'm sure you got to stop and stuff, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I appreciate you coming on. We do have a question from the previous guest, and then you'll answer that, and then you'll leave a question for the next guest. So Joel, do you have a couple more minutes, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
Question from last week was, if you have exited a company or property in the past, do you wish you would have held it? Or if you have some, like moving forward, are you looking at, with the properties and companies that you do have now, are you looking to make an exit, or are you looking to hold, and why?
There's a couple of things with real estate. Like I said, I had all these 10 homes, but even with that property in Texas, we ended up selling it. I wish I would have held on to it. And I didn't understand the power of leverage, because I probably would have just got a line of credit on any of the, you know, I'd get a, you know, an appraisal and then loaned against it and use that money to go get other deals. I would have held on to all real estate. As far as the company goes, we're going to have an opportunity here to make that very decision, whether we want to stay on and sell it, or, you know, there's people that are going to approach us. We're going to market and we're going to see if we can sell this bad boy. And then, but it will depend on what kind of structure it is. Meaning, if it's a strategic partner, I'd probably stay on and maybe take a second bite of the apple, because they'll want to flip it even for bigger money. But if somebody offers me big money, I mean, I'm not dumb. I'm going to take it, and I can always invest with my cousin, with Justin, with other people, and let my money work for me. But, you know, I've always been of the mindset to take a little piece. It's kind of like somebody coming around in a party with hors d'oeuvres. You just take a little piece along the way, you know, every once in a while. It's not bad, you know, and it's worked for us so far. I'm not dumb. I'll take it when I can get it. But in the real estate world, I think I would probably try to hold on to most, or like Justin does, is flip it into a bigger project and flip them, you know, for bigger and better opportunities in real estate.
And protect it from the tax man.
Yeah. Yours is great, because yours is passive income. And mine is like, dude, I cannot get out of it. It's crazy. I pay so much in taxes. I try, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing about being full-time real estate. You're active and passive can both be wiped out by a lot of appreciation and whatnot.
That's what I love about real estate.
Yeah. Jeff, what question do you have for the next guest?
I think maybe, what is your biggest hesitation into taking action and moving forward with deals when they come? You know, I see a lot of deals that come across, and sometimes I'm like, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? What is their biggest thing that makes them pause? Because like you guys said, it's all about taking action and doing it. You know, on the gambling table, if you don't, you bet big to win big sometimes, right? But you know, there's some risk involved. So like, what is the biggest thing that has people pause or hesitate from doing deals?
You know, the craziest thing too about people making decisions on certain things is, I think you'll relate, is there's a lot of times I'll have someone that's waiting and just pontificating on something, whereas I'll make the decision, I was wrong. I'll make the next decision to try to correct it. I was wrong, you know, and I keep being wrong. I could be wrong 6 or 8 times, but I make that decision so quick that I can be wrong 6 or 8 times and still then find the right answer and the right path before the other person's ever even made that first decision. And I think they also put so much weight on the failure, where it's like, look, not all failures the same, because there's very few things in life that are going to completely cripple you for the rest of your life.
Right.
If you make a mistake.
I think that's, you know, that being hesitant on deals and other things is where you can definitely miss the boat, because, man, I've had some opportunities to miss me, but most of the time we're just going to move and make it happen. So we're usually ahead of the game.
100%. Sweet. Well, awesome, Jeff. Appreciate you hopping on and taking the time. And all you guys that are listening to Let's Get It podcast, thank you very much. Tune in to the next one.